This is Audible.
Podium Publishing presents After the EMP, Chaos, written by Harley Tate, performed by Dara Rosenberg, Scott Aiello, and Eva Kaminsky. Chaos comes.
Day 16, without power. Chapter 1. Colt. University of Oregon campus, Eugene, Oregon. 8 a.m. The bed shifted beneath Colt's weight, and he rolled to the side. Heather took up most of the bed, her hips teasing him beneath the threadbare sheet. At any other time in his life, Colt would have slid closer and enjoyed a little extracurricular start to his morning. But not today. He sat up and scrubbed at the beard now coating his jaw. According to the paper calendar on the wall, the nation's power grid failed just over 2 weeks ago. That's how long he'd been making do in Eugene, Oregon. A spit of a town centered around a college campus and not much more. It wasn't Colt's idea of a good time. But then again, Heather had been a welcome distraction. Being an air marshal, he'd always had a soft spot for flight attendants. Heather murmured in her sleep and rolled onto her back, and Colt admired the view. Red curls fanning out across the pillow, soft. Skin the color of milky tea. Freckles unhidden by makeup. Part of him would miss waking up like this every day. It had been a shock to watch the lights go out from cruising altitude above Oregon. Thanks to a quick-thinking pilot, the 747 emergency landed on a tiny little airstrip outside of Eugene. But even watching the blackout didn't prepare Colt for learning the truth on the ground. A massive EMP hit the United States. The EMP didn't come from a terrorist attack or another country, but from the sun. He shook his head in wonder at it all. The same sun they relied on to stay alive had belched out a massive ball of gas so big it caused an electromagnetic pulse large enough to fry the power grid across the country. From what he'd been able to learn from the National Guard the past 2 weeks, things were bad. Real bad. Riots had shut down all the major cities coast to coast. Thousands of police, firefighters, and military personnel had abandoned their posts, desperate to get home to their families and protect them. Colt knew if he'd had a girlfriend or wife back home, he would have done anything to make it back. But he wasn't a family man. No baggage, no weight, no compromises. That's how he lived his life ever since he became a SEAL. And that's how he would live it now that the world was knee-deep in a steaming pile of crap and sinking fast. He thought about the pilot of the plane, Walter Sloan. Did he make it home to his family in Sacramento? Were they still alive today? Fear and panic had etched lines into the man's face as he said goodbye after landing the 747. Colt didn't blame him for leaving. Worrying about loved ones could tear anyone apart. Lucky for Colt, that wasn't a problem. He stood up and slipped on his jeans, tugging up the worn and dirty denim before reaching for his shirt. As the black cotton slipped over his head, Heather murmured at him.
Where are you going so early?
No sense in sugarcoating it. I'm packing up. Time for me to head out. She sat up, clutching the sheet around her as she blinked herself awake.
Does the Army have a job for you or something?
Colt grabbed his shoes and perched on the edge of the bed, concentrating on his socks so he didn't have to look Heather in the eye. This wasn't about helping out the National Guard or the people of Eugene or even the SEALs. It was about leaving before he became attached, and his choices were no longer 100% his own. He shoved one foot in a shoe and then the other. I've been here long enough. It's time I hit the road. The bed dipped as she scooted closer.
But I'm not ready to leave. We've got a place to sleep, and so far there's been enough food and water for everyone here. The Army has been good to us.
Colt tied his laces. I'm leaving alone, Heather. The responding silence seized Colt's insides, squeezing like an anaconda of regret. He sat for a moment, staring at his shoes, contemplating all the things he could say. He could throw out some platitudes and lies, a bit of puffery to ease the passage of the truth. But Colt wasn't that type of man. Standing up, he faced Heather at last. She pressed her plump lips together and stared. Colt waited.
So that's it?
Heather broke eye contact and shook her head.
You shack up with me for 2 weeks, and then you just walk out?
You knew it was temporary. I told you when you offered to share a room that I don't do relationships.
Her curls bounced as she scooted to the edge of the bed.
All men say that.
I meant it.
But where are you going to go? What are you going to do? The government has to be coming soon. This is a big town. There's a college here. They've got supplies and the National Guard, and if we just wait it out, someone will come and help us.
I wouldn't count on it.
Colt grabbed his holster, fitting it inside his waistband before adding his service pistol. So many things had been nagging at him the past 2 weeks. He'd let them go because of Heather, but he couldn't any longer.
You should think about what you're going to do when the Army's hospitality runs out.
Heather's eyes widened.
What are you talking about?
We've been lucky so far, but sooner or later, that will change.
He dropped his voice.
There's something not right here, Heather. Where are all the college kids, the townies? This campus should be teeming with people. Instead, it's just us, all the people from the plane who didn't leave, and the National Guard.
He ran a hand through his hair.
It's going to get worse, a hell of a lot worse.
She shook her head.
You're talking crazy.
No, I'm not.
Heather rolled her eyes and reached for her clothes on the floor, and Colt turned around. He didn't want to fight with her, but he knew she would never see the world as he did. She would always believe someone out there would help her. So many people in the United States lived in a blissful ignorance about the rest of the world and the danger that lurked beyond their borders. Colt had seen enough in his life to know what a farce such naive thinking could be. A crisis this big, with no plans in place? No one would be coming to help, not ever. That the Army was in Eugene at all surprised him. He exhaled and reached for his duffel. Even if he wanted to bring Heather with him, she would never agree to go. She would cling to her hope until she didn't have the strength to hold on. He waited until she'd finished getting dressed.
I'm going to pack my things and head over to the cafeteria. You're welcome to come with me.
You're making a mistake, Colt. Once the National Guard gets a handle on the riots in Sacramento, we'll be able to go home.
Is that what you want? To go back to Sacramento?
Of course I do. I live there. My sister is there and her kids. I need to get home. As soon as they give us the all clear, that's where I'm headed.
And how are you going to get there?
She gawked at him.
In a vehicle? How else? I'm sure there will be buses taking people home soon. We just have to have faith.
Colt shook his head. He would never get through to her. He grabbed his bag and began shoving everything into it.
First thing he needed to do when he got out of there would be to find a sporting goods store and secure a good backpack, more weapons, and gear. It wouldn't be nearly enough, but it would be a start.
Heather stood at the edge of the bed, arms folded across her flight crew polo shirt, watching him. He hated to leave her mad and in denial, but he didn't see another way. She couldn't come with him.
Roughing it in the woods, far away from civilization, wasn't Heather's style.
The woman still put on a full face of makeup every morning. They didn't have running water or flushable toilets, but she found a way to apply mascara. Colt glanced up at her.
You should start gathering up some gear, Heather. A winter coat, some hiking boots, a flashlight, maybe even a gun if you can find one.
What would I need a gun for?
To protect yourself.
She snorted.
Don't be silly. No one will attack me.
He stood up and waited until she looked him in the eye.
You're a beautiful woman, Heather.
Her whole face lit up at the compliment.
The longer this all goes on, the more of a target you'll become. Men will see you as an opportunity, a prize to be won.
Her smile slipped.
You're talking like this is the end of the world, like we're all a few days away from Mad Max.
We are.
She rolled her eyes.
After that show on the airplane, I knew you had a few screws loose, but Colt, seriously, this is too much.
He blinked,
she didn't approve of how he handled the situation? The man made terroristic threats on an airplane. I had to bring him in.
He was harmless. You didn't need to draw a gun on him and lead him out in handcuffs. I know you guys like to make a big deal out of your jobs and all, but you could have tried talking to the guy.
Colt's jaw ticked. He did talk to him until the conversation incited panic among the other passengers. If he hadn't taken that guy off the airplane, all hell would have broken loose. They would never have taken off, and they would still be in Sacramento. Was that why she was so mad? Did she blame him for being stuck in Eugene? He frowned.
I was doing my job.
A little too well, if you ask me.
I didn't.
Colt picked up his bag and slung it over his shoulder. A million thoughts swirled inside his head, none of them good.
Remember what I said, Heather. You need to prepare and stay vigilant.
You'll see, Colt. In a few days, we'll be on the way back home, and you'll be wishing you stayed right here on campus.
For your sake, I hope you're right.
Colt closed the distance between them in two strides. He knew now that whatever drew them together these past weeks, it wasn't real. They were just two people in the right place at the right time. He unzipped his bag and pulled out a small folding knife. He wouldn't part with his service weapon, but Heather could have his backup. She needed a weapon. He grabbed her hand and set the knife in her waiting palm.
Take this. It's not a gun, but it's a good blade. It could save your life.
Colt, I don't...
Just take it. For me.
She closed her fingers over the folded knife and nodded.
You sure I can't change your mind? That bed will be awful empty without you.
He nodded.
I need to go.
Okay.
She reached up and smoothed the front of his shirt, fingers lingering on the swell of his chest.
It was fun while it lasted.
Yes, it was.
Colt leaned in and kissed her lightly on the lips.
Be careful, Heather, and good luck.
Good luck to you, too. When all of this blows over, come look me up in Sacramento, will you?
Heather stepped back and headed to the nightstand. She scribbled something on a scrap of paper and handed it to Colt. Her phone number. Colt swallowed. No point in telling her, it would probably never work again.
Thanks, Heather.
After one more kiss, Colt turned and headed toward the door. He'd spent the last 2 weeks in denial about the future, wrapped up in the arms of a woman who would never come to terms with this new reality.
Vacation was over. Colt needed to get to work.
Chapter 2. Danny. Sunnyvale Convalescent Hospital. Eugene, Oregon. 9 a.m.
Danielle, stop staring out that window and come over here.
Danny sighed and turned away from the glass to smile at her grandmother. No matter how many times she asked the 79-year-old to call her Danny, it didn't stick. What is it, Gran?
You should eat. Come and have my applesauce.
I'm not going to eat all of your food.
Please, Danielle, I don't want it to go to waste.
Her grandmother pushed the little cup of applesauce across the tray table, and Danny reluctantly picked it up. She peeled back the aluminum lid and stuck the plastic spork into the cup before shoving it into her mouth. The nursing home where her grandmother lived was low on everything. Water, food, bathrooms. Danny had been camping out there for the past week, hiding from the handful of employees who still made the rounds of the recovery wing, and sharing her grandmother's dwindling meals. Danny didn't know if it was their proximity to the college campus or the quick thinking of the staff, but this place had done all right for itself for the past 2 weeks. But even her grandmother knew their time at Sunnyvale Convalescent Hospital was running short. As Danny finished the last of the applesauce, she turned her attention back to the window. From her grandmother's room on the third floor, she could see a few blocks across town to the stadium for the University of Oregon. National Guardsmen stood outside, rifles in their hands as they stood watch. She had read enough books growing up that she knew those guys were the only reason the hospital hadn't been looted. Other parts of Eugene still smoldered. Thanks to her history class, Danny knew that at 150,000 people, Eugene was the second largest city in Oregon. That meant Eugene had its fair share of thugs and the drugs to go along with them. She snorted as images of her mother came to mind. The world ended, and her mother didn't even bother to come home. She shouldn't care, but she couldn't help it. Danny turned around. "Do you think Mom will come home one of these days?" Her grandmother clucked.
"Don't you fret about your mother. That woman doesn't deserve your attention."
Danny chewed on her lip. How she wished Gran had never gotten sick. If only cancer hadn't reared its ugly head, they would still be living in that apartment uptown with working heat and food in the fridge, and a good high school just down the street. Life didn't ever seem to work out the way Danny wanted it. Her grandmother interrupted her thoughts.
"Your mother probably found somewhere else to stay."
Danny nodded. It wasn't the first time her mother had disappeared for days at a time. But with the power still out, and no help other than the army, Danny wondered, "Where is she?" The sound of footsteps down the hall caught her off guard, and Danny rushed to the little closet. She slipped inside just as a familiar voice called out.
"Good afternoon, Mrs. Weber. I see you liked your lunch today. Good for you."
Gran cleared her throat.
"Do you by any chance have any extra? I noticed the portions were a bit smaller today."
Danny strained to hear through the wood of the closet door.
"I'm afraid not. Our kitchen is still waiting on our delivery for this week, but don't you worry. I'm sure we'll be back up to full meals soon."
Sounds of the orderly flitting about the room, fluffing pillows and taking the tray table away, made Danny's heart beat double time in her chest. She didn't know what would happen to her if she got caught. Did foster care still exist? Juvenile detention? Worse? All she knew was that a 15-year-old didn't get to make her own choices, even if she did a better job of it than her mother ever did. At last, her grandmother gave the all clear, and Danny stepped out of the closet.
"That was close. I need to pay more attention."
"I still think we should tell them that you're here, my dear. I'm sure they would let you stay under the circumstances."
"No, we can't risk it. What if they call the police? I'll get taken to the station, and when they can't find Mom, I'll get sent away. Maybe even detention."
Danny tucked her hair behind her ear.
"I'm still on probation, Gran. I can't risk it."
Her grandmother's wrinkled lips thinned to a line.
"I still can't believe you stole those groceries. If you were hungry, you should have come to me. I would have helped you."
Danny stayed silent. She wasn't about to tell her grandmother about that day.
"It doesn't matter. I just need to avoid the police. That's all."
"You sound like your mother."
Danny recoiled from the sting of her grandmother's words.
"I'm nothing like her."
Gran exhaled and patted the edge of the bed.
"I'm sorry. I didn't mean it. It's just, I have a bad feeling about all of this."
"So do I."
Danny walked over to her grandmother's bed and let Gran wrap her up in a hug. Gran's hair smelled like lavender, and Danny wanted to curl on her lap and pretend she was 5 years old.
"I don't think we can stay here much longer. The food is running out. I heard an orderly say the backup generators are running on fumes and they haven't been paid in over a week."
She pulled back and met her grandmother's patient gaze.
"We're going to have to find somewhere else to go."
Gran reached for her hand.
"I've been doing a lot of thinking, Danny."
She smiled, but it didn't reach her eyes.
"I think you should go without me."
"No, Gran."
Danny tried to pull her hand away, but her grandmother gripped it tight.
"I'm an old woman in a hospital bed, Danielle. I'll only slow you down."
"That's no reason to give up. I can't just leave you here."
"Yes, you can. Besides, I need medicine. If I don't take my prescriptions, I'll die. It's as simple as that.
Danny yanked hard enough to free her hand as she stood up. There have to be thousands of extra pills here. I can find them and convince the staff to give them to us. She paused. Her grandmother had to understand. What if the staff leave and don't come back? Without someone bringing you food, you'll starve to death. Her grandmother's eyes shimmered behind her glasses.
You're young. You have your whole life ahead of you. I'm an old woman, Danielle. Maybe this is my time to go.
No. Danny refused to listen to another word. Her grandmother was the only good person in her life. She wasn't going to lose her. If you won't leave, then I won't either. We'll both stay.
You need more food. Water. I know how hungry you are. I can see it in your eyes.
Danny turned away. Then I'll go out and look for some. She reached down for her backpack hidden beneath the bed. I'll leave right now. She slung the bag over her shoulder and wiped at her face. Her grandmother didn't need to see her tears.
Are you sure?
Yes. Danny turned around and forced a smile. If you won't leave, then I won't either. Not until I have to. But that doesn't mean we can't have something better to eat. I'll be back before dark. She leaned forward and gave her grandmother a quick kiss on the forehead.
Be careful, Danielle. We don't know how dangerous the world is now.
Gran might not, but Danny sure did. Spending 3 years living with a drug addict mother taught a girl a thing or two about surviving on the streets. Danny could keep them both alive. She didn't have another choice. Without another word, Danny slipped out the door to her grandmother's room and made her way to the stairs. By her count, only 3 orderlies still worked this wing of the building. If she could time it right, she could get in and out without a single one seeing her. After running down 2 flights of stairs, Danny eased the ground floor door open and listened. Silence. She pushed it open and slipped through, holding it until it closed. Maybe her grandmother was right, and a simple conversation with the staff would mean she could come and go whenever she liked. But the longer the blackout went on, the meaner everyone would get. It wasn't that different from a junkie coming down from a high without any money for another hit. Danny had seen it so many times, she knew all the signs. First the shakes, then vomiting and diarrhea, then the pleading and begging. The sweetest words came out of her mom's mouth when she was fishing for a few extra dollars. She would screw up her face into what passed for a smile and reach out with shaky fingers.
Your hair is so pretty today, Danielle. Did you do the laundry? Everything smells so nice. Any chance you have a few extra dollars from Grandma I can borrow?
If the answer was no, punches always landed twice as hard after a compliment. Danny shook off the memories. It didn't matter whether the staff of the nursing home would welcome her or call the cops. She didn't need them either way. She had Gran, and that was enough. Peering into the nearest room, Danny found what she was looking for. A ground floor window. She eased inside the empty room and hurried to the glass. Facing the rear of the property in a row of bushes, no one would notice if it stayed unlocked and had a hole in the screen. She pushed it open, took the pocket knife from her backpack, and cut across the bottom of the screen. In another minute, she was out the window and on the ground. She pushed the window back down and rushed to the edge of the building. Food and water. Those were the necessities. If she could find a good stash, maybe they could stay in the nursing home until the power came back on, or the place shut down. Either way, it would keep her grandmother alive. That was what mattered.
Chapter 3. Colt. University of Oregon Campus, Eugene, Oregon. 9:30 a.m. Colt strode with purpose through the halls of the University of Oregon. Thanks to spring break in the National Guard unit that set up shop on campus, Colt had managed to place all the passengers in temporary dorms. After promising the pilot that he would take care of the passengers, it was the least he could do. When he'd secured the deal, Colt assumed they would all be there a weekend, tops. The power would come back on and the whole thing would be a giant misunderstanding. He'd seen crazy things like rolling blackouts and only 1 hour of electricity overseas, but in the United States? Never thought it would happen. 16 days later, he embraced reality with both arms. This was still the early time. Millions of people around the country still lived in denial. Neighbors and friends banded together and shared resources. Churches opened their doors and took strangers in. But soon, things would begin to change. He'd seen it in war-torn cities and refugee camps. Soon, the strong would take advantage of the weak. Soon, the people unprepared for the stark brutality of life without plenty would suffer. Colt didn't want to be there when it happened. He had to get out. His explanation to Heather had only been half of the truth. Leaving wasn't just about hitting the road as a single guy without anyone bogging him down. It was about survival. Some of the things he'd seen and done in the Navy, he shook his head to clear it of the horrors of the past. His job brought baggage, but knowledge, too. He could assess threats as they came and act accordingly. He could act and react without pausing to think. A girlfriend would only complicate that. They always did. He waved at the handful of people in the hall. A woman with her young daughter from row 14. A man with his teenage son from row 28. Another crew member who decided to stay and not find a way home to Sacramento first thing. All told, 47 other people stayed behind in Eugene after the plane made the emergency landing post-EMP. 47 people sitting in their temporary rooms day after day, waiting for someone to save them and make everything okay. Nothing would ever be okay again. Colt adjusted the duffel on his shoulder before pushing the door open to the outside. It felt good to breathe the cool Oregon air. "Hey, Colt." He turned and smiled at the man who called his name. "Hi, Roger. How are you?" Roger shrugged his oversized frame and squinted up at the sky. "It's not raining, so I guess it's a good day." Just promoted to sergeant a week before the blackout, Roger Gunther was a good kid who spent most of his time under the hood of a 1966 Mustang convertible. From the pictures he'd shown Colt, the car was a beauty. Too bad the kid wouldn't be using it anytime soon. "Out for some fresh air?" The sergeant's face fell. "Have you heard anything about the restrictions we rolled out this morning?" Colt paused. Restrictions meant trouble. "No." Roger glanced at the space between the two buildings up ahead, and Colt followed suit. A fellow National Guardsman paced back and forth in and out of Colt's field of view. "Orders came down from Colonel Jarvis this morning. No one in, no one out. Authorized personnel only." Colt frowned. "Were you trying to leave?" Roger nodded. "I wanted to take a walk, get out and see some of Eugene, meet some of the neighbors. They told me only soldiers assigned to patrol could leave, claim we're on lockdown for security reasons." "That doesn't make any sense." Colt squinted into the distance. "Isn't there already a mandatory curfew?" Roger nodded. "Sundown to sunup, and the patrol units go out every night, driving up and down the streets, keeping everyone in check." "Are there riots somewhere? A part of the city they don't have under control?" Roger hesitated. "I'm not really supposed to say." Colt nodded. The kid probably told him too much already. But the lockdown gave Colt pause. The military didn't enforce restrictions like that unless they expected to lose control of an area. Was Eugene about to fall like Sacramento? He thought about the stories other guardsmen like Roger told him of Sacramento. One shaken-up private told him the whole city was on fire, and they had been ordered to seal everyone inside. The good
and the bad, it didn't matter. If a person was inside the riot area when the barricades went up, they didn't get to leave, no matter what. If that was happening in a relatively calm place like Eugene, then it was happening all over. The only question in Colt's mind was whether the lockdown was intended to protect the people inside, or just keep them contained. He glanced at Roger.
If you want to leave, you should do it now. Otherwise, just stay put and follow orders.
Roger nodded.
Thanks, Colt.
Colt said his goodbyes and watched Roger walk away. If what the sergeant said was true, Colt needed to get out before he had to fight his way out. No one was trapping Colt Potter behind a fence. He strode toward the road head up, eyes searching for potential conflicts. It had been a long time since he'd operated in the field, but his job as an air marshal forced Colt into a state of hypervigilance often enough that the skills came back in an instant. Eugene wasn't a third-world village halfway across the country, but the threats would be the same before too long. When food and water ran out, ordinary people would turn desperate. Some probably already were. That a National Guard presence had mobilized so quickly in the area meant parts of the town had to be secure. A much better outcome than other cities. Portland was chaos. Sacramento, San Francisco, Seattle. All worse than any town in the Middle East. Fires, looting, robbery, murder, crimes without punishment. People without any means to protect themselves. Too many bad people in too small a place. Take away the law and order and chaos erupted in their place. From what Colt had seen inside the college campus, the National Guard had done a damn fine job in Eugene. Rumors among the passengers claimed the Army found a means to tap into wind turbines on the coast and power the campus. That in a matter of days, they would be turning the whole town back on. From what Colt had been able to discover, most of the power was being used by the Army, but he hoped once they secured the campus, they would do their best to restore the power to the whole town. Power made order possible. The mandatory curfew and supposed patrols full of armed men didn't hurt either. Colt wondered how long the quasi-military state would last when the guardsmen didn't get paid and were told they couldn't go home. The more the area turned into an open-air prison, the more the local townspeople would rebel. Some would start in secret, but some would be bold and out in the open. The first public skirmish would undermine the tenuous peace. A few poor decisions, and it would disintegrate into something akin to a war zone. Battles for territory and control. Fights over limited resources and access to food and water. Medicine and drugs would be worth more than life itself. What role would the diminishing military play in all of it? Colt hoped he didn't have to find out.
Sir! Excuse me, sir!
Colt slowed and turned his head. A National Guardsman approached, rifle held in a relaxed grip across his chest. As the man approached, Colt glanced at his rank.
Is there a problem, Corporal?
Sir, my orders are to keep everyone inside the college campus. It's for your own safety.
Colt pulled out his wallet and flashed the Air Marshal ID.
I'm a United States Air Marshal. I've been here working to secure the safety of a flight that emergency landed in the area, but now I need to leave and get back to work.
He took a step forward, but the corporal's rifle swung out.
Sir, I'm sorry. My orders are not to let anyone in or out.
Are you setting up barricades?
I can't confirm any information, sir. Please go back inside.
No.
The corporal stared at him, unsure what to do. Colt seized the opportunity and took a step forward.
What happens when someone refuses to obey? What are your orders then?
To detain and wait for assistance.
Colt shook his head and stepped to the side.
How old are you? 22?
20, sir.
How many tours have you seen?
None, sir.
Well, before I became an air marshal, I was a SEAL, so how about you put that rifle down and let me walk out of here?
I can't do
Before the kid even finished his sentence, Colt closed the distance between them. He shoved the palm of his left hand out hard and fast, hitting the cover panel of the rifle as he swung up with his right. Colt's fist connected, sending the kid's head careening to the left. Colt wrapped his hands around the rifle and slipped it out of the corporal's grasp. It was over in seconds. The kid blinked, staring in shock at Colt before looking down at his empty hands.
How did you...
Skill, and a lot of practice. Colt glanced around. So far, they were the only two on the road, but that could change any moment. Now, I'd like to give this back to you, but I want to leave more.
The corporal swallowed. If I promise not to shoot you, will you give my rifle back?
Will you let me leave? The kid's head bobbed up and down. All right, if you keep your word, I'll walk away, and you'll never see me again. If you don't, you won't like what happens next.
He nodded again. I'll keep my word. I promise.
For your sake, I hope you do. Colt checked the safety and gave the rifle back to the kid. If I were you, I'd keep a better handle on my weapon. Just because you're holding it doesn't mean someone isn't going to get the upper hand.
Yes, sir.
Colt flashed the kid a smile and stepped into the street. He pretended not to notice the tip of the rifle shook as he turned around. 10 feet away, he glanced back. The poor guy still stood there, scared and dumbfounded, unable to do anything but gawk. He would either learn or die trying. Colt hoped it would be the former. With a final wave, he took off, trotting down the street and out of sight of anyone on patrol.
Chapter 4. Danny. Downtown, Eugene, Oregon. 10 a.m.
Whoa. Danny sucked in a breath. The first one in she didn't know how long. Her fingers tingled. The hair on her neck stood at attention. She watched the man in the black T-shirt disarm the military guy with a sleight of hand and a well-timed punch. She'd never seen anything like it. He was dangerous. Awe-inspiring. But before she knew it, he'd handed the rifle right back to the guy and turned around. He simply walked away. Danny swallowed. How did he do it? If she ever tried something like that, she would end up shot or thrown in jail. Being 15 and half his size might have something to do with that, but still. She might be able to sneak past a $10-an-hour security guard with a candy bar in her back pocket. But disarm someone with a gun? No freaking way. Was he military, too? Some sort of secret agent man like Fox Mulder or Alex Krasek? When she lived with Gran, all she got to watch on TV were shows about sewing or painting or nature, except for reruns of The X-Files. Gran loved that show, and Danny did too. The first few months after Gran moved to the nursing home, Danny used to sit in the kitchen window of her mom's apartment, daydreaming that she was Dana Scully, fighting bad guys with her partner all over the country. After a while, the fantasies faded. It was hard to think about the future when you were focused on just surviving the next day. They didn't even have a TV. Her mother sold it to support her drug habit. Danny shook her head to clear the fog of the past and climbed up the rear stairs of the corner store. Once she got old enough to walk down the street without catching the eye of the police or well-meaning busybodies, convinced she was lost, Danny walked the 3 miles to the nursing home. Thanks to her weekly treks, she had learned the layout of the nearby streets. 4 blocks from the nursing home, the little store was one of those places that cater to broke college kids with bread and milk and a whole back wall of beer. It sat 1 block off the college campus in a building with painted brick walls and a bright green awning out front. Danny had been in it a few times to grab things for Gran with a handful of dollars the old woman scraped together somehow. But she'd never stolen from the place. Danny reserved that for the big places. Who wouldn't miss a granola bar or an energy drink? Beggars couldn't be choosers, though. Her mom told her that over and over and over. When all they had was a bottle of ketchup and a can of tuna, that's what Danny ate. When they didn't have that, she bit down on her tongue hard enough to draw blood. The metallic tang hit her taste buds, and Danny inhaled. Food and water and getting back to Gran was all that mattered. If only she could be a little bit like that guy from the street. She glanced down at her hands,
fingernails grimy with dirt, half the cuticles red and torn. Gran deserved someone better looking out for her, someone like that stranger. But Danny would do the best she could. With a deep breath, she tugged her sweatshirt off and wrapped it around her hand. Now or never. She punched the window pane, and it splintered. She hit it again, and it broke, big, jagged pieces falling all over the ground. It sounded like crystal gunshots, shattering the silence. Danny glanced up. Did anyone hear? After a moment of waiting with nothing but the sound of her own breath as company, she stripped off the sweatshirt and reached inside the broken window and fumbled with the lock. It didn't budge. Cursing, she stuck more of her arm inside, twisting her body to gain enough leverage to turn the lock. The broken glass cut her arm and she let out a cry. Dude, she couldn't even open a door without screwing it up. Danny began to pull her arm away, but the thought of Gran made her pause. Gran needed her. She would just have to try harder. Focusing on the pain in her arm and the lock, Danny closed her eyes to concentrate. She gripped the edge of the lock, tugging hard as she braced her body on the door for leverage. It moved. She exhaled in relief. A few more yanks on the lock, and it released. She turned the knob and slipped inside. Without power, the threat of an alarm or video feed was gone. That had always been her biggest fear before the lights went out. Were they watching her? Would someone in a back room see her slip a snack into her jeans? Would they come to get her? That's how it happened the first time. The only time. Danny had been so hungry. She'd been sloppy and careless and half out of her mind. The cop didn't care. The detention center didn't care. She didn't get something to eat until she passed out in the holding cell and slammed her head on the metal bench. She reached up and ran her fingers over the scar. 13 stitches, a vending machine sandwich, and 10 days in juvie. Danny put on 5 pounds. It had been the best 10 days of ninth grade. Running her hand along a hallway wall, Danny felt her way toward the front of the store. The hall ended with 2 doors. One felt cold and metal, the other wood. She opted for metal. Fire code meant metal doors for stairwells, wood for everything else. She knew that much. Turning the handle, she held her breath. The door opened into darkness. Danny couldn't see a thing. She reached into her pocket and pulled out a lighter she'd pocketed before she left home. After flicking it on, she held it out in front of her. Yes! Stairs! She took them slow and quiet, easing down each one as the little flame wobbled in front of her. Halfway down, the metal of the lighter grew too hot and she released it, plunging the stairwell into darkness. She felt her way down the rest of the way, 1 foot easing over the stair to the next one, again and again, until she hit the bottom floor. Jamming her thumb down hard on the spark wheel, Danny lit the lighter again and gritted her teeth against the heat. She'd reached a tiny vestibule, no bigger than a coat closet, with nothing but a metal door and walls. She reached for the door with her free hand and turned the knob. It opened, and she stuck the lighter out in front of her. The store. Danny lifted her thumb and the light extinguished. Thanks to the east-facing windows, she could see despite the paper covering the glass. The morning sun peeked through all the cracks and crevices, spilling into the store and lighting up row upon row of food. Saliva pooled in Danny's mouth as she swallowed it down. Chips, candy, cookies. All of it would taste so good. But Danny learned over time what to steal and what to leave behind. She wasn't there for a quick fix or a sugar rush. She needed things that would keep her full and keep her going. Down the aisle she raced, head low and feet quiet, ever mindful of minimizing noise and movement. She found the energy bars and rushed to open one, shoving the chocolate-coated oats and nuts into her mouth as fast as she could. It went down hard, and she opened the closest drink, a bright green, no-name soda. Screw the water. She needed calories. Nutrition class had been such a waste in school. A perfect teacher with sensible shoes and a home-packed lunch lecturing her about empty calories. Try no calories, Danny wanted to shout half the time. But she didn't. Instead, she nodded along, took the test, kept her head down, and hoped no one noticed her growling stomach when she stared at pictures of food. At least she ate school lunch. Monday through Friday, one meal a day. Better than none. She tore into another bar, shoveling it into her mouth much like the first. Only when she'd finished it off and the rest of the soda did she stop to breathe. If the allure of food hadn't driven the fear from her mind and overpowered her senses, maybe she would have heard the lock turning or caught the flash of light. But Danny didn't look up until too late.
Chapter 5. Colt. Downtown, Eugene, Oregon, 10:30 a.m. The broken glass crunched beneath Colt's brown leather dress shoe, and he reminded himself to find some boots. Good, sturdy ones with waterproofing and a steel toe. Boots he could kick a door down with and still hike for 10 miles the same day. He eased into the store, avoiding the piles of tempered glass surrounding the empty window frame. At some point, he would have to sit down and think through his new situation. The last 2 weeks had been wasted. Tucked inside a dorm room with Heather, he could forget about society crumbling to pieces all around them. But standing in the middle of a ransacked store, Colt couldn't ignore reality. Even a small town like Eugene, where college kids usually dominated the streets and people still smiled at strangers, wasn't immune. How long before it turned into another Portland? How long before the fires burned long into the night and the good people of the town fought to survive? 16 days without power, and some must be desperate. Were they starving? So thirsty they resorted to stealing? Colt reached for the butt of his pistol and touched it for reassurance. He didn't have the same qualms about right and wrong in emergency situations, at least not when it came to resources. He wouldn't take more than he needed or waste those items he didn't use, but Colt would steal. If stealing kept him alive, then he had a chance to pay it forward. Someone out there would need help, and he would give it. So many TV shows showed people turning vicious and cold the minute the power went out or the apocalypse happened. Colt had been in situations just as bad or worse. It didn't turn him into the bad guy. If anything, it made him more aware of the need to be human and have compassion. But only toward those he could trust or neutralize. Someone threatened him? Forget it. He looked around him at all the senseless destruction. Someone busted the front window and stormed in, probably heading straight for the beer cases that now stood empty. Idiots. Soon, money would be worthless, and trading would be essential. He needed things of value that people would pay dearly to acquire. In the military, guys were always trading. Gear, supplies, food. The more time he spent in the field, out in some dust bowl of a country, talking to locals and gathering intel, the more trading became a critical part of life. Barter always sat better with him than outright theft. Unfortunately, he was miles from home with nothing of value. He'd have to start with theft and work his way up. He kicked at a toppled-over circular stand that once held 100 bags of chips. Bypassing the remaining candy, chips, and pretzels, he went straight for the wall behind the register. He stopped in front of the plexiglass case and smiled. So many cigarettes. They were practically priceless. From the scratches on the plastic, it appeared someone already tried to get in without success. The 2-inch padlock and tamper-resistant case kept ordinary thieves out, but not Colt.
Half of his buddies from the Navy knew crazy ways to open locks using everything from strips of soda cans to a pair of wrenches and a lot of upper body strength. Colt preferred the path of least resistance. He turned to the counter and felt around the dark space beneath it, fingers running over curled magazines and a tin of dip before settling on the item he needed, keys. Colt plucked them from the shelf before selecting the most likely candidate. Bingo! The lock popped open, he pushed the plexiglass back, and Colt had access to hundreds of boxes of cigarettes without making a single noise or spending an afternoon frustrated or sweaty. Always try the easy way first. After grabbing a plastic shopping bag, he fluffed it until the smiley face on the side showed off a full grin and stuffed the cartons inside, 10 in all. He would have loved to take more, but without a means of easy transport, this would have to do. The plexiglass slid back into place with ease, and Colt locked it up before pocketing the keys. No sense in giving anyone else unfettered access. Now that he had something to trade, he could turn to more obvious needs, like food and water. He grabbed as many bottles of water as he could squeeze into his already full carry-on duffel from the plane, a handful of power bars, mixed nuts, and jerky. With all of it, he could make do for a few days, a week if he had to. He skirted a knocked-over display case and shook his head. The things people stole never made sense. Warm beer, chips and candy bars, sunglasses and keychains and every kind of doodad on the market. All temporary highs that didn't mean anything in the long run. Those same people had empty cupboards and hungry bellies 2 days later. Colt paused and looked around. The obvious had been taken, but what about the rest? Were there things he could use? He walked to the rear of the store toward the miscellaneous aisle that held everything from antifreeze to baby wipes and everything in between. After shaking open another grocery bag, Colt filled it. First, a map of the area, then a little flashlight, batteries, a pack of bungee cords and zip ties. He wished he could take the motor oil, but there wasn't any room. As the shelves transitioned to cleaning supplies, Colt grabbed hand sanitizer and wipes, and toilet paper, Vaseline, and cotton balls, and dental floss. There were so many things that could come in handy, but Colt had enough. He never took the last of anything, and he only took enough to see him through this initial burst of hardship. Whatever happened in the coming weeks and months, he would have to find a place to hunker down and set up camp. Only then would he forage for more supplies or work on necessary trades. For now, he needed his wits and easy transport. He turned and looked out the broken window. The college bookstore sat behind the National Guard's new perimeter, but it would have everything he needed. A solid backpack, a hat, and a raincoat to survive the sudden rain that seemed to come out of nowhere up here. It meant risking a trip back inside, but what choice did he have? If he didn't find a local off-campus place that had what he needed, the bookstore would be his next stop. Colt waded through the wreckage toward the front of the store. He caught a glimpse of his reflection in the unbroken section of glass and paused. Loaded down with plastic shopping bags and an overfull duffel, he looked every bit the thief. He wasn't any better than the hoodlums who smashed the place. He didn't break down the front window, but he still availed himself of the opportunity. But what choice did he have? Over 100 miles from home, with nothing but the clothes on his back and a carry-on? Colt wasn't prepared for the end of the world. He could choose to leave everything where it sat and attempt to survive without food or water or any supplies, but that would be a death sentence. He could go back to the college and sit around with idle hands, waiting for the other shoe to drop. What if the army confiscated his weapon? What if they put him to work in some sort of labor camp? What if they just walked away when the food ran out and the college wasn't useful anymore? No. Colt was a survivor. He would take what he needed and let go of the guilt. Pass it forward when he could. Stepping out of the store, he held his head high. As he turned the corner of the building, he came face to face with his first glimpse of the future. Chapter 6. Colt. Downtown.
Eugene, Oregon. 11 a.m.
Let me go!
The high-pitched voice echoed off the brick wall beside Colt's head, and he ducked into the shadow of the building.
No effing way.
I didn't do anything!
Bullshit. You were in that store stuffing your face full of food that doesn't belong to you.
I was gonna pay for it!
Colt eased back toward the broken window and deposited his things in the darkness beyond the glass. Whoever was out there didn't need to see his haul of cigarettes and beef jerky. At least not yet. He slipped his cig out of his holster and checked to confirm it was ready to fire. A little voice in his head told him to grab his crap and get out of there, but Colt couldn't. The person screaming to be let go sounded way too young to be treated like a criminal. He eased down the street, eyes sharp for any movement. Urban reconnaissance was the worst. Too many windows and doors, countless places to hide. It made accurate threat assessments almost impossible. 2 feet from the corner, he paused. The voices picked back up.
Don't touch me!
Shit. Colt eased forward and pulled his sunglasses off the top of his head. He held them out at an angle, just past the brick corner of the building, and tilted them until he could see. Mirrored lenses had so many advantages. From his distorted view, it appeared a single soldier held a scrap of a girl by the backpack, and the little thing was giving him a serious run for his money. The soldier was so caught up keeping the girl at arm's length, he never looked up. Not once. Colt pulled his glasses back and slipped them on before easing close enough to peer around the corner.
Please, mister, just let me go!
Not a chance, sweetheart. You're going straight to lockup. By the look of you, I bet you've gone there a million times.
What a jerk. The soldier couldn't have been much older than the one he disarmed half a mile down the road, but this guy had a hard-on for some action. With his rifle slung over his shoulder, he couldn't even defend himself properly. All he cared about was punishing some kid for finding a way to stay alive. Colt frowned. He couldn't stand guys like this. From the looks of the girl, she'd been hungry a while. Sunken cheeks, stringy hair, the wild, feral look kids get when they've gone too long without. He'd seen it too many times across the world. Kids with old faces and bottomless eyes. The girl twisted in the soldier's grasp, her arms locked down across her chest to keep the straps of her backpack on her shoulders. The army jerk kept trying to unzip her pack, but with one hand holding the top handle, he couldn't secure enough leverage to get it open.
Hold still, damn it!
No! Let me go!
The soldier cursed again and pulled his arm back. Colt tensed as the guy's palm landed smack on the girl's head.
I said hold still. Don't make me ask again.
Colt hesitated. Although he could make the shot, the soldier didn't deserve a bullet. Maybe if Colt revealed himself, he could talk the guy down, but it might end up in a fight. Would the kid even be thankful? Did she want to be rescued? It wasn't much for saving helpless things. The girl stilled enough for the soldier to open her backpack, and he whistled in appreciation.
Well, look what we have here.
He pulled out a box of Slim Jims.
He sure will come in handy back at the base.
Those are mine!
She twisted in his grip, but he leaned in close and she ducked her face away.
That's right. I'm the one in charge. Consider everything in this backpack payment for the grief you've put me through.
Colt rolled his eyes. He should walk away. The girl didn't mean anything to him, and helping her would only expose him to risk and potential injury. She wasn't a fighter. Not really. One good hit, and she'd already cowered into submission. Bringing his pistol back, he began to move away from the corner when an anguished cry tore from the girl.
Stop! That's for Gran! It's not yours!
She scrabbled at the man's hands, where he held a six-pack of some drink in his hands.
She needs it!
You got an old lady to take care of? Shit, little girl. She's gonna be dead in a week, with no one but you looking out for her. She won't mind if I help myself to her stash.
In an instant, the girl's demeanor changed. Gone was the shrinking violet, and in her place, a fighter. She twisted in the soldier's grip and brought her knee to her chest. Colt inhaled and found his focus. Everything slowed. The girl's foot came down hard on the soldier's knee, and Colt watched the joint buckle and warp. A shout ripped from the man's lungs as his leg gave way, but he didn't release his grip on the backpack.
If only she let the bag go, she could get away. She would be free. But the stubborn kid wouldn't give it up. She slipped her arms out and spun around before yanking on it with all her might. The soldier groaned and landed hard on the ground.